that they can not only reduce energy consumption, but also make their occupants more comfortable. Classic examples, overheating and overcooling. I mean, you're wasting energy and you're creating complaints in situations like that. So you really want to get these things right.
Hi, I'm Vivek Kartha, and welcome to Deconstructed. Every episode, we're discussing the future of the world's largest asset class, real estate, through the eyes of the people who live and breathe it. Thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com. Hi, everyone. We are here today with Paul Reale, Director of Building Operations Research and Training at the City University of New York Building Performance Labs. Quite a mouthful. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Vivek. It's great to be here. And yes, it is a mouthful. Sorry about that.
Well, let's get the audience grounded quickly on CUNY Building Performance Labs. Can you tell us a little bit about the organization?
Yeah, we were founded, I think it was 15 years ago now, with a grant from NYSERDA, that's the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. We really focus on high-performance building operations, training, especially focused on operators. I mean, it's really about running buildings efficiently. We have a lot of projects that we work on that are involved in data analysis in terms of building performance, measurement verification, and my area of focus is on training primarily and research associated with training.
So efficiency, energy management, all this sort of stuff is very topic du jour these days in commercial real estate. Maybe give the audience a little bit of a sense of the breadth of projects you specifically are working on today, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper.
Well, because I'm director of training, a lot of our work focuses on the operators. We also, by the way, get involved in training architects and engineers when it comes to designing retrofits. We are also now involved in building owners and property managers and helping them understand how they can make, shall I say, lead projects or get started on projects and come up with plans for how to get their buildings to be more energy efficient. But really, our sweet spot is in the operator piece. And so we focus on commercial buildings and multifamily residential buildings. Those are two very different markets, not only in terms of, you know, the real estate business, but also in terms of how you run those buildings. There's a lot of commonality, but there are a lot of differences as well. So we get involved in training operators in both spaces.
So you mentioned training owners and operators on how to manage buildings more effectively. Why do they want to do that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons that I'm sure you know even more answers than I do on that, Vivek. But I will say when it comes to energy efficiency, a lot of them are being pressed to run their buildings with less energy and also especially to reduce carbon emissions. And that's because there are mandates coming out of municipal governments, state governments, and I expect the federal government before long, given what's been going on within the current context. So there's going to be pressure to reduce energy consumption within these buildings, and not particularly because these owners want to do that. That's not really their business. It just happens to be their assets and what they need to do with them in order to comply with what could be local laws.
I want to get to the local laws, and New York is often a leading indicator of where the rest of the country goes, but I will get to that in a second. Something I found fascinating is why now? The Building Performance Labs has been around, I think you said, 15, 16 years. I've been hearing about carbon emissions since I was in grade school in the 90s. Why now? Because it seems like I pick up the Chicago Tribune, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, energy efficiency, it's all over the place in commercial real estate now, and it seems like it's accelerated over the last year. Why now?
Well, frankly, you know, I have to go back all the way to 2006 when Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, came out, and that seemed to increase awareness significantly back then. But, you know, getting traction was difficult, and it became politicized. And so here we are today, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, regardless of what you think about climate change, I think that there's been enough time for the wheels to actually grab the road and that we're actually making some progress. And not only that, but also I think the political climate is changing, has changed significantly, so that now we're actually seeing those laws come into place in a lot of municipalities, and that it looks like even in Congress at the federal level, we're seeing members of Congress that are starting to push forward what could be not cap and trade, but what is it, tax and dividend kind of approaches. And that actually is really starting to get some traction. So, and that's on both sides of the aisle, frankly. So it's interesting to see that kind of evolve. But enough. I mean, here in New York City, I can tell you we have some very aggressive laws like the world has never seen before in terms of reducing carbon emissions from buildings. And so with the amount of real estate that we have here in New York, you can well imagine that there's going to be a lot of money spent to reduce carbon emissions here in New York.
For our listeners that are familiar with New York, I was mentioning to Paul, I recently happened back into the city and I saw a bunch of letter grades on buildings. And I assumed, like in the past, those were for health and sanitation. Can I eat at this restaurant or not? And it turned out they also have these letter grades for energy efficiency of some large multifamily and commercial assets, which was, I had been to the city in a couple of years, was news to me. Let's assume owners and operators care more now than they did before. And let's also assume that there's this changing regulation towards governments, municipalities demanding more energy efficiency. And I think that's where your team and your work comes into play. So help make that a little bit more real for us. How do you help operators who presumably have decades of experience in managing assets get better at it?
Yeah, great question. So ultimately, what people often do is they'll look at that grand level of the building and they'll say, okay, how much energy is the building using? But the reality is we don't really know whether that's a good number or a bad number for a given operator, because you run based on what you're given. So in other words, if the question is this operator doing a good job or not? You know, they might get, you know, what we call an Energy Star score, which is from 1 to 100, where 100 is spectacular and 1 is lousy. If they're running at 30, you know, that sounds pretty bad. But if you had a not so skilled operator, it could be a 15. What we really care about is seeing these operators get better and better, improving their scores on their buildings when they're compared with other buildings. So that's one piece of it. As far as the letter grades that you brought up, that is a key piece of the puzzle, because I think that there's a lot of people that are looking at their, you know, letter grade D, which sure doesn't sound good, but that happens to be the average score here in New York City right now for tens of thousands of buildings that require these kinds of postings. And so there's a lot of attention that's being paid to that. But in addition to that, there's another law, which is called here Local Law 97, which is capping carbon emissions from buildings. And starting with performance in 2024, if you don't meet that cap, you have to pay a penalty. And these penalties can be very significant indeed. And so owners are going to be very much motivated to get these energy efficiency measures in place.
On the ways that you can help building owners change things. So let's take sort of very unsophisticated, this is coming from my point of view, close your windows and turn off your AC when people aren't in the building, to I see sophisticated machine learning software that's optimizing lighting suite by suite in an office building. Where are we as an industry, and what kind of tools lead to the biggest bang for buck in this space?
If you have a building automation system, which is that central computer that is essentially tied to all of your air handlers and chiller plant and cooling towers and boilers and hot water distribution and you name it, that will often enable you to look at how these various systems are doing over time. You know, one of the problems, of course, is that while an operator can walk his or her rounds, walk into these various mechanical rooms and see what's going on at that moment, they don't know what was happening 5 minutes before they walked in that room. So we want to see trending. We want to see what's been happening for the last couple of weeks for these various systems. And that's critical. So we do a lot of that. We do a lot of time series analysis over time, looking historically at what's been happening lately. And that gives us lots and lots of clues, dozens and dozens of things. So to be specific, Vivek, making sure that you're allowing the right amount of outside air in. If you let in too much outside air, more than is needed in order to provide a healthy environment, and it's wintertime, you have to heat that extra outside air. Same thing in the summer, you have to cool it. Making sure that your scheduling is tight, that it's only on when it needs to be on. It's only running as fast as it needs to run. You know, 41% of all electricity on the planet goes to running motors. And what runs our buildings, the HVAC in our buildings? It's mostly motors, right? Turning pumps, turning fans, turning compressors. And that's very expensive. And so if you can slow them down or shut them off, it makes a huge difference. And we've got dozens of ways of accomplishing that.
And do you see a world in the future, and we'll come to future trends down the road, but I thought I'd ask, where most of these assets are using some sort of computerized system or intelligence to guide these decisions and that becomes table stakes? Or is that a fantasy sci-fi world of the future that we might not ever get to or we might not need to get to?
It's a little of both, and I'll tell you why. Because in the early days, what you really want is to automate more, right? So a good example would be a hot water reset. You don't want the temperature of your hot water that's circulating around your building to be any hotter than it has to be. And that could vary day to day, depending on what the weather is, right? So one way to do it is to have the operator check the weather forecast, change the set point for that day, and then go about his business. Another way is to put in a little controller that says, I'm going to change the hot water supply temperature set point based on what the outside air temperature is. That's a level of delegation, if you will. The operator is delegating that responsibility to that little control gadget. And I think there's going to be more and more delegation over time. But I still believe that the operator's understanding of that is absolutely critical. Otherwise, it could be cut. They may have to disable it because they think that might be the problem if something wrong is going on in their building. So it's a combination of both the operator being involved and being, you know, manually intervening in some cases, but in other cases, delegating more and more responsibility to more and more automation.
So switching gears a little bit, we mentioned that government local regulation in New York, changing laws, has driven a lot of the demand for change that the operators are now embracing. Do you see other parties or other constituents in the real estate ecosystem becoming more and more a part of that? And I'm thinking about tenants, the consumers in the space, investors, the owners in the space, or is this really a regulation and operator-driven change for now?
Well, I think the owners need to engage their tenants very much so when we have those kinds of relationships, landlord-tenant relationships, because the tenants, in fact, consume what could be the majority of the energy in the building. And so without their cooperation, you have very little chance of reducing your energy consumption. I still think that the operators are really critical. And the reality is that, you know, there is a study that the Pacific Northwest National Lab has done, and they did across a swath of scores of buildings. They applied this building retuning technique that we've adopted and advanced on our own and teach to our operators. And in doing so, they reduced building energy consumption by 14% on average across those buildings. So getting those operators to run the buildings more tightly is the easiest, the cheapest, and the fastest way to reduce energy consumption and carbon emissions. But I must also grant you that, you know, getting the tenants involved is something that we very much believe that the portfolio owners must do, is get them involved, is to cooperate on those issues.
And in your role, what do you think about the efficacy of the training that you're running and the projects that you're accountable for? I'm sure there's some part quantitative, some part qualitative. How do you think about your role in that and what success looks like in these projects? And then as you step back, the contribution the team is making to the New York landscape of operating real estate?
Listen, you know, it's really one operator at a time, one building at a time. But when you do that, if you get more and more of these operators within an organization that are actually doing this, now you're talking about a cultural change. Historically, what's been happening is that the operators are all about ensuring occupant comfort. And it's been all about that. And the energy efficiency has been secondary, if not tertiary. However, now that there's pressure to focus on energy efficiency as well, what we find is that these operators are finding ways, or we're teaching them ways, that they can not only reduce energy consumption, but also make their occupants more comfortable. Classic examples, overheating and overcooling. I mean, you're wasting energy and you're creating complaints in situations like that. So you really want to get these things right.
Well, let's extrapolate that change out 5-10 years. We'd love to hear some of your thoughts on how you see this landscape continuing to evolve and where you think we're headed. And maybe starting with New York City is a good place to start.
Yeah, well, I think in New York City, I mean, we've had industry estimates with this new set of laws that's here, is that in New York City alone, within the 2020s, we will be spending $20 billion with a B on retrofits for buildings. $20 billion business just for energy efficiency. It's a tremendous investment that will be made. And that's because the penalties for emitting too much carbon are significant. So it makes those investments wise. But going forward, I think that coaching operators, which is what we've been doing for going on 5 years now, coaching operators in running their buildings more tightly. And it's not just a bunch of slide decks where we go in and we present to them. It's working with them. Okay, Larry, let's talk about air handler number 3. What's going on with those dampers? Are they working? They've been broken for 3 months. Well, okay, let's see if we can't get that on our punch list. You know, and working with them to get things repaired. And to optimize the set points, you know, it looks like you're bringing in way too much outside air. Can we reduce the minimum outside air damper position and those kinds of things? So that's fine. And we've honed that technique over the last several years. And so now what we're doing is, and remarkably, this is one of the silver linings of the pandemic. We've learned how to do this remotely now. Not only that, but we're working with the Department of Energy. We've got a 3-year project with the DOE to coach operators remotely. And so we've developed a platform and we'll be piloting this program for what will be something like 50 buildings starting in calendar 2022 as part of this project to do this in many cities. And I'm really looking forward to keeping that rolling.
Maybe talk to the executives, senior operators, people that are managing teams in this space that are a little bit farther from the day-to-day. How would you like them to start thinking, or what advice would you provide to them to think about why invest in training my team on these techniques now?
I'll tell you something. What it really boils down to is that if they don't, then these operators will become obsolete. They really must run those facilities more efficiently. And if they don't, you're going to find that they're going to get killed in terms of energy costs and carbon emissions going forward, because it's going to be a significant piece of the real estate puzzle going forward. I really do think that that's, and not only that, but investing them. You know, I love this Richard Branson quote, which is, train your people so that they can leave, but treat them so they'll want to stay. And I think that is really what makes for a good management of a portfolio when it comes to building operations, is that make sure that you keep training them, keep investing in your people, and treat them well so that you get to nurture them and, you know, have them spend out, you know, many, many years of their careers in your organization.
I love that quote as well. When you think about who else needs to be involved in this space, so government starting to pick its head up, obviously, the academic institutions, research institutions are involved and have been for decades now. Who else would you like to see participate more greatly in this sea change in the way we think about buildings and running operations efficiently?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the vast majority of the buildings that are standing right now will be standing in 50 years. And so a lot of it has to do with maintaining and evolving the current building stock. But I do love the idea, and we're seeing a lot of this now, Vivek, across the real estate industry are some really new and interesting technologies and techniques that are coming to play in the design and construction of buildings. So we're seeing some really high-performance buildings coming to the market. And that's really exciting to see. Those are just good examples, though, of where we will be going. At the same time, we know that by the time the existing buildings are gone, it will be too late if we're just waiting for the new ones. So we have to address, it's not really a you know, sexy, if you will, but, you know, if we're looking at this older building stock, it's really the central issue is getting this old building stock to work well.
Last sort of question for you. You're coming to the table with a New York-centric mind. You know the laws and regulations there well. It's a commercial real estate capital of the country, certainly. Do you see a majority of the changes you've observed in New York getting ported and transported to our other large metro areas over time? And if so, in what ways might it be different than what you've seen in New York?
You know, here in New York, a lot of the laws that came onto the books were back in 2009. This was something called the Greener, Greater Buildings Plan, had to do with benchmarking and energy audits and the like, things like that. We have now seen other cities adopt these techniques, and they're a little bit different depending on which city you go to, depending on the square footage of the building to which the laws apply, the frequency with which they must do things, certain variations in what they must do when it comes to commissioning the buildings, in other words, getting the systems to run as they're capable of running. I essentially seen the same basic thrust. I don't know if there's a lot of diversity. It's more about the diversity of when the policies roll out to address the different issues. And I really do believe that we're going to see, especially in the cities where you've got the larger buildings, you're going to see these laws roll out in earnest in a big way over the next 5 to 10 years because we've already had a lot of traction in a number of cities here in the United States.
Yeah, that I think that makes sense. It seems like this wave of change, and just colloquially, it's coming up more and more in public news consumption and magazines and newspapers I read and conversation with people I know. And it seems like we're at the start of, well, maybe we're not quite at the start, but we're definitely in the early stages of a larger change here.
I think you're right.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. And good luck on all the work ahead.
Thank you, Vivek. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And as always, a very special thank you to our guests. We'll be back soon, so please subscribe to Deconstructed on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. More details can be found at www.goworkspace.com/podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Workspace. Workspace has built a better way to manage real estate without all the clicks. With a suite of modern, intuitive products for commercial real estate operators, Workspace reduces the friction between assets, data, and people, allowing CRE professionals to streamline all their daily operations across property management, asset management, and beyond. Learn more at www.goworkspace.com.